from 6 on 2FM.
Yes, well, a big thank you as always to MN Rods for keeping us entertained this afternoon. It is Thursday the 11th of August. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up over the course of the next hour, we'll be crossing live the Tallaght Stadium ahead of St. Patrick's Athletic versus CSKA Sofia. Keith Tracy will be giving his thoughts out of that one, and indeed Sligo's meeting with Viking of Norway. Former Daisha captain Brian Flannery will have the latest on the strong possibility of Davy Fitzgerald returning to Waterford Hurling. Jeff Shepherd has his eye on US sport and will have the latest sports news from today, as well as hearing from Ireland rugby captain Nicola Friday and manager Greg McWilliams ahead of Ireland's tour of Japan. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so. Text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. It is great to have your company on this Thursday evening. Again, I hope you're enjoying the sun across the country today. Likewise, yesterday as well. It's such a scorcher, and it has been a scorching day of sport as well, because the European Championships started this morning, and there's plenty of news to report from a variety of disciplines. So Olympic gold medalist Paul O'Donovan Fintan McCarthy progressed directly to the A final of the lightweight men's double sculls by winning their heat at the European Championships in Munich today. O'Donovan and McCarthy finished almost 6 seconds clear of second place Switzerland. It was an equally impressive morning for Ireland's women's four of Natalie Long, Tara Hanlon, Afrik Kyo and Emer Lam, who qualified directly for their final by winning their heat. Elsewhere today, the women's eight featuring the aforementioned women's four along with Zoe Hyde, Sunita Pasper, Fiona Murta and Emily Hegarty, and coxswain Leah O'Regan missed out on an automatic place in their final, finishing in second place in their heat, 2 seconds behind the Netherlands. The women's pair of Fiona Murta and Emily Hegarty finished third of five boats in their heat, while in the women's a double scull, Sunita Pusper and Zoe Hyde finished second behind the Netherlands to book a spot in the semi-finals. Disappointment in the artistic gymnastics. We had a team in a sub-division two who finished 13th. It was the top eight teams that qualified for the team final. So Ireland had a total score of 140.929. Germany were leading the way there with a total score of 158.730. And in cycling, well, good news, because the Irish women's team qualified in sixth place in the team pursuit. They'll face France tomorrow, who ranked third today. Ireland were about 8 seconds slower than the French today. Of course, Ireland got a bronze medal last year. So Ireland came in with a final time of 4:26 seconds, the French 4:18, and Germany, similar to the gymnastics, leading the way, 4 minutes 14 seconds, 0.688. We do have a competitor in the BMX, Ryan Henderson, our first representation in that discipline in the cycling. He is yet to compete. He is up after Kieran Riley of Britain, who's up next. So he'll be the 21st competitor out of 29 athletes, I should say. But we can cross live to Rome for the swimming, the European Aquatics Championships, because RT Sports' Darren Frehill is there, and there's plenty of action this morning. But in the last few minutes, and in the last while, just before we came on air, Darren, we had two competitors in semi-final action, Dara Green and Max McCusker. But unfortunately, that is where the story ends in these events for those two swimmers.
Yeah, good afternoon, good evening, Shane. And I know it's pretty warm at home, but I bet it's not as warm as it is here in Rome at the minute, because I am sweating buckets all day. A beautiful outdoor arena here right beside the Olympic Stadium. Stunning backdrop, but unfortunately we're out in the sun all day, so I'll be glad to get home. Eight swimmers in action in Rome this morning, and the opening day, only Dara and Max advancing in their events, as you say there. Dara Green, I have to say, a swimmer who is looking back to his best. He certainly did this morning in the 100 metre breaststroke. This is his first major competition since the Olympics last summer. Swam a really decent time this morning. Just looked good. Just over the minute mark. Put him into the semi-finals as the eighth quickest. Okay, the top eight go through to the final. That semi-final has just taken place. but unfortunately he has not progressed. He came in with the time, disappointing time, well over a minute, 1.0139 seconds, well off his best, 16th overall. And remember, that top eight would have got you to the final. Very disappointed, but I think he'll take a lot of encouragement from his swim this morning. I spoke to him a short time ago.
A bit off pace this evening, but yeah, no, happy overall, really, especially getting back into it all. Had a bit of a break after the games, and yeah, like, I've done, yeah, it was good swim overall, like, the start of the week. Obviously, I was hoping a bit faster, but sure, had swimming in the end of the day. But I look forward to going ahead during the week now. Have the 200 and the 50 and a few relays, so.
I just want to say to you as well, this morning, and it's never easy getting in, being one of the first out at these championships, but you look back to your best. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, no, getting back to it, slowly but surely. A few things to obviously go back and look over, but yeah, no, like, really, really promising. Because this is all just stepping stones on to the next one, so with Worlds and then Paris again, so yeah, no, look forward to it all.
And are you looking forward to the rest of this week here in Rome?
Sorry?
Are you looking forward to the rest of this week in Rome?
Oh yeah, I really look forward to it. Like, it's an unbelievable venue to just be back racing again. Like, it's unbelievable.
It's been a while for you.
Been a while, that's right. I think it's like this is the first time I've shaved down since Tokyo, so look forward to everything ahead.
So slowly but surely getting back to his best, Darragh Green. Darren, you mentioned as well there was plenty of other Irish action in the pool throughout the day.
There was indeed, and I want to give a special mention to Max McCusker, because he was one of the first swimmers actually in the pool this morning, one of the first to arrive here. He was in the 50 metre butterfly, came through his heat really well, but didn't progress beyond the semi-final, which has taken place in the last hour or so. He's actually the Irish record holder in that 50 metre butterfly. Wasn't able to beat it. His time this morning, just coming up short, qualified with 23.61, 23.44 is the record. And again, didn't go as well. Usually these swimmers go a little bit quicker in the evening. It's evening time, less heat, all the rest, but 23.75. I think he'd be disappointed overall, but glad to get into that semi-final. He was 15th overall. As I mentioned at the top, eight swimmers in total. I want to mention a couple of others as well. Vicky Catterson, Danielle Hill, they were both competing at the Commonwealth Games. And you know what? I think it's probably taken a lot out of them ahead of these European Championships. They didn't really feature. Brendan Hyland as well didn't get out of his 50-metre butterfly event. He was actually in the field with Max McCusker there. Mentions as well for Liam Custer, Owen Corby. They were competing in the 400 metres and the 100 breaststroke, not progressing. And last but by no means least, Shane, I want to mention young Grace Hodgkins. She is going to be one to watch. She was competing in the 800 metre freestyle. This is her first major championships, competing in the short course back in December. But this is her first major competition that she's been in, and I tell you what, she's only 17 years of age, not long on 17 either, but mature beyond her years. Really good to see her in the pool, and she is going to be one to watch, believe me.
Great stuff. I suppose that echoes Andrew Bree's comments of yesterday, that this is a Irish contingent mixed with experience and youth. Darren Frehill, thank you very much. Get into the shade, go get hydrated. Relax for the evening now, so you can. Darren, thank you very much. We are going to be chatting football just before we do. Just some other news of the day. The Ireland show jumping team have qualified for the World Championship final. They'll be in 9th or 10th place, with the top 10 qualifying at the top 5 after tomorrow's final qualify for the 2024 Olympics. So scores carry 4, so unlikely they may qualify for the Olympics, but very well done to the Irish show jumping team there, just stepping away from the European Championships.
Game on.
Football.
But I'm delighted to say Keith Tracy joins me now as we look ahead at a big night in Europe for League of Ireland teams. Keith, you're on your way to Tallaght Stadium for St Patrick's Athletic versus CSKA Sofia, a game that you can see live on RT News now for those that can't attend Tallaght Stadium. Sligo Rovers also in action this evening against Viking. They are 5-1 down on aggregate. Team news is in from Sligo. So disappointing, Aidan Keane picked up a knock on Sunday, so he misses out. Colley and Brendan Moran only able for the bench, a full debut for Robbie Burton, who partners Greg Bulger and Adam McDonnell in midfield. So it's McNicholas in goal, Banks, Blaney, Bulger, Fitzgerald, Livak, McDonald, Burton, Kirk, Mata and Pinnacker as well, that make up the starting 11 for Sligo. But Keith, we are going to be chatting Pats and Sofia because the Saints are looking to progress to a Conference League playoff. They bring a 1-0 lead into their third round decider with CSKA Sofia tonight, a fixture that has been moved to Tala because of stadium requirements, so it can't be played in Chicor. So if Tim Clancy's side finish the job, it will bring their European prize fund across the 1 million mark and give them a shot at either Bronby or Basel at the final hurdle. Bronby hold a 1-0 aggregate advantage ahead of their second leg in Switzerland. So I suppose, Keith, from what you've seen in the first leg, how confident are you ahead of your trip to Tala?
I don't know whether confident would be the right word. I'm very, very hopeful. I hope Pats can get it over the line, but I don't know what it is. You know, CSKA, they weren't great in the first leg. It was an excellent result for Pats. I thought Pats earned the win. They defended really well at times. Joseph Anang in the Pats goal, he was excellent, especially in the, if we go back even to the Mora game, he was really good. But I just expect CSKA just to go through the gears. They've played four competitive league games now. They've had a couple of Champions League warm-ups as well. So they're just starting to get into their stride now. So I do believe there's a way, you know, there is a blueprint for Pats to go and win this game. I think it'll be quite similar to the first leg where CSKA will dominate the ball and Pats will sit in. But with the likes of Billy King, Barry Carr, even Serge, if he comes off the bench, and if Tunde comes off the bench, there's so much pace in that Pats team. So if they can keep it really, really tight and just have some fringe players just hanging in and around and just ready to go straight for the jugular when Pats win it, I think there could be a result there. But make no mistake about it, it's going to be a long, tough night. They're going to, Chris Forrester, Adam O'Reilly, they're going to have big, big jobs in the middle of the park. They're going to have to be prepared to suffer physically. If Pats do that and they can keep CSKA down to one, maybe even two goals tonight and Pats can get on the score sheet, I think Pats may be able to just do it. But believe me, it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, we hope to have a little bit of team news later on. Colm Mullany will be at Tala Stadium for us and we'll be crossing live to him a little bit later on. Is there a fear, Keith, that perhaps similar, you and I had this conversation and we heard Chris Forrester's remarks and everything about Murrah underestimating Pats and not really giving them the respect. Is there a fear that similarly, that perhaps CSKA Sofia underestimated Pats first time around and that we're going to see a big response now, and how much as a result, if that is the case, Pats will need to up their game?
Well, Pats will need to up their game because CSKA now, they're behind in the tie. They're going to come over here and they're going to have to go and get on the score sheet. They can't come here and sit back. They're going to have to go for Pats at some point. So I think that plays into Pats' hands. I think, like I said, with the pace they do have in the counter-attack, if they can be nice and compact and just frustrate CSKA, you make them shoot from distance and just harry them and harass them all over the pitch. Don't give them a second. I think Pats will get on the score sheet tonight. It's just whether or not it will make a difference if they defend well enough. I think these sort of things, when clubs do, I've seen, you know, when I play for Pats in Europe, they do come over and you can see that certain clubs look down their nose. I think Motherwell did it against Sligo and Sligo managed to turn them over. I hope CSK come over here and they look down their nose. I know it's in Tallaght and not in Richmond Road, but I hope they look down their nose. I hope they're not up for it. I hope they don't want to play here tonight because that all goes into Pats' hands, and if CSKA are half the team that people think they are, they should be well up for this. And for me, I think it's going to be a really good game because, like I say, I do expect Sofia to turn up tonight, but I also expect Pats to turn up.
You've had a close eye on Pats not only in Europe but indeed throughout the season. Like, what's impressed you most and what is their best quality in terms of how Tim Clancy sets up this team?
I think they're really adaptable. I love the wingers. I love Billy King. Barry Carter's been a great addition coming in as well. And I love that, you know, they play about 50, 60 minutes and the options they have on the bench. Serge Atakoy, who got the goal against CSKA, he's so quick. He's a little bit raw, technically not great just yet, but he's young and he can learn. He is absolutely rapid, as you're saying, for the goal. And Tunde as well, if he comes off the bench, big, strong, athletic, will run the challenge for you. They've got a lot of options in attack and they do defend well. And like I said, Joseph Anang in the Pats goal, I think he's going to be one to watch. I really, really like him. Owen Doyle up front, Adam O'Reilly and Chris Forrester as well. You'd see if he can get his passing range tonight and, you know, find a little bit of space in the middle of the park and get things ticking over, like I said, with the pace that Pats do possess in the wings, I do see a route to goal for them. It's just whether or not they can keep CSKA out. But like I said, the way Tim sets them up is really, really good. They play a 4-2-3-1. Owen Doyle will probably be isolated most of the game, but when he gets it, as you're seeing, he will bring Chris Forrester into play. So there will be long runs up, long balls up there on Doyle, and he will have to get hold of them and bring people into play. But if they can do that, I'm sure there could be a positive result there.
Yeah, just, I suppose, sticking with the topic of Tim Clancy, I was reading today that both Tim Clancy, granted now he's only played a couple of matches, but both himself and UCD's Martin Moran back in 2000, the only two Irish managers who are unbeaten in Europe at the moment. Stephen Kenny leads the way with 12 unbeaten matches out of 44. Then Pat Fenlon, 11 out of 35, who is level with Stephen Bradley, who is 11 out of 25. And Buckley, 5 out of 30. But just, I suppose, bigger picture, how impressed have you been with Tim Clancy and this journey that Pats have gone on? Because I think Alan Matthews was up doing media duty and he mentions, you know, someone said to me, was the plan to get to the group stages? We have a long way to go to get to the group stages. The plan was to see if we could make progress in Europe. We have, but we want to make further progress and build it from there. Like, I mean, overall, it's been a fairly successful run.
It has been, yeah. If they can get over this hurdle tonight, it'll be excellent. And you know, they have some glamour toys coming up if they do get over it. But the way Tim Clancy's gone about it, when Stephen O'Donnell left and went to Dundalk a year or so ago, people were thinking it looked like a bit of a backward step, because it looked like Pats were a little bit stronger than Dundalk at the time. But Stephen O'Donnell has obviously invested in Dundalk and wanted to go back there, so he did. And Tim came in from Drogheda and took the Pats job, and you weren't sure which way Tim was going to go. He'd done really, really well at Drogheda, but Pats was a step up, European football as well. And I think he's done really, really well. I think he has a knack with the players. I think he's a really good one-to-one manager. And, you know, players these days, they're a little bit different to what they were like when I was playing. But he has this knack of getting people to run through brick walls from the likes of Serge and Tunde. They can't be happy being on the bench, but when they come on, they always make an impact. And you know, that's a glowing reference to Tim Clancy, because when players aren't happy being on the bench, how many times have we seen them come on and, you know, throw that dummy out of the pram and not really want to be there? But he seems to be able to keep these fringe players happy, and they're doing really well in the league at the minute. If they've got a big game on Sunday against Sligo, if they can somehow turn Sligo over, and I know they've got Shelbourne to come as well, that one got postponed. But look, I think it's going well, but you know, you're only ever two or three bad results away from disaster in the Irish league, especially with Euro coming around as well. So it is looking really good on the Tim Clancy, but like I say, you can never get too complacent.
That Shelbourne match that was postponed due to travel issues for St. Pat's, they were left stranded over in Sofia, and they had to get charter flights back, or sorry, commercial flights then back via Stansted, some at 6:30 in the morning, some as late as 6 p.m. that evening. So it certainly was staggered and was far from ideal. And Alan Matthews was speaking about security issues as well, about there was two police cars parked upside the hotel, they couldn't really leave the hotel as well. So it was fairly moody, to say the least. I suppose if you're to stick your player hat on, Keith, how big of a distraction, how big of a frustration, and how big of an issue will those travel issues be? And also, my second question to that is, where's the moodiest place you've played in that there's been a few security issues?
Well, I'll answer. Well, the moodiest place in terms of international football, I'm not too sure, because most of my caps came in Dublin, so I wouldn't want to flip it and say they've always been really good. But in terms of England, there's been a couple of moody places. The Den, the old Millwall's old ground, the Den was a pretty moody place at the best of times, especially if you're winning. But I've heard the stuff about the security and, you know, the threats in the hotel. And for me, you know, if I was Tim Clancy, I'd be having a word with the lads, and I'd be saying, listen, this is big time football. CSKA are a huge club. You've got a big, big result here, and you see the people outside, they want to have a look at you. You can't leave the hotel because of the security. This is big time football. There's a big upset here, and I'd just be putting more fuel into the fire for the game tonight, and saying, you know, the night you were stuck in the hotel, or all the travel arrangements, I'd put all the frustration that was built up and just put it into that game. So I know it was nothing to do with CSKA as a club, but I would try and turn it on its head and make the lads think that it was, and just put all your anger and frustration into the game. And give everything you can for a positive result tonight.
Okay, well, Pat's Sophia is at 7:45 in Talla Stadium. As I say, Colin Mullaney will have team news there. Just a very final brief question for you, Keith. Sligo Rovers also in action this evening. A terrific achievement getting this far. They have certainly an uphill battle in that one, considering they are 5-1 down on aggregate. But I suppose, again, it's a great achievement getting this far for Sligo Rovers. And again, similar to Tim Clancy, John Russell's done brilliant since he's come on board.
Yes, John's done a great job since he came in. Not an easy job to take when you think of Liam Buckley coming out. It's a hard, big shoes to fill, and he has done really well. And you know, Viking are a very, very decent team. It's 5-1. You know, Sligo will be thinking there's one or two goals they could have stopped. And you know, tonight the message for me tonight from John Russell would be quite easy: go and win the game. You know, forget about the first leg. We're quite really out of the toy. But if we can go and win it 1-0, 2-1. Just go out there and give a good account of yourselves, because he let themselves down in the fourth leg, but they do have a chance to redeem themselves. I'm not talking about going and winning the tie, but just go and win the match tonight and get a bit of redemption in it. And like I said, it's hard, big boots to fill with Liam Buckley leaving, but I think John Russell is... I was there, I spent a bit of time at Sligo doing a bit of training while John was working under Liam Buckley, and you could see that he had his manager hat on, the way he would approach sessions and having a couple of one-on-one chats with him as well. He's a really nice fella, so I wish him all the best. And he seems to have that. These new wave of managers coming in seem to know how to deal with the younger players and how to bring them on. And John certainly seems to have that knack as well.
Absolutely. Well, Sligo Rovers and St. Pat's in European action this evening. Keith, you're on your way to Talla Stadium, so thanks very much for taking the call, and indeed enjoy the match. So Colin Mullaney will have team news from Talla Stadium a little bit later on, but we're going to turn our attention to hurling after the break, because there is a very, very strong possibility that Davy Fitz is returning to Waterford as inter-county manager. Could be revealed as early as tonight. So Brian Flannery, former Waterford captain, will be giving his thoughts on a potential Davy 2.0.
Game on 2FM.
You're very welcome back to Game On this Thursday evening. Before we chat hurling, just some golf news to bring you. Leona Maguire finished her opening round like a train to surge up the leaderboard at the ISPS Honda World Invitational into a tie for second, just one shot off the leader. Cabin woman had 3 bogeys, 3 birdies and an eagle on the par 5 third in a roller coaster first nine in County Antrim. She started her back nine slowly, parring 10 and 11 before bogeying 12, but Maguire then took off. She birdied 13 and picked up shots on 16, 17, 18 to sign off with a 5-under 68 and rocket up to second. And just to update you on the international T20 match between Ireland and Afghanistan. Afghanistan made 122 for 8 of their 20 overs, and Ireland are currently in the 15th over and they are 89 for 4. But we are going to turn our attention to hurling in the company of former Waterford captain Brian Flannery.
Game on.
Hurling.
Brian, it is great to have your company, because the story of the day in the hurling world is that Davy Fitzgerald is the leading contender to be announced as the new Waterford senior hurling manager at a county board meeting that has been convened for tonight. The meeting at Lawler's Hotel in Dungarvan has been called by the Waterford GAA executive, where they are set to reveal the successor to Liam Cahill in the Daisha hot seat. Cahill stepped down last month, of course, after 3 seasons at the helm and led Waterford... at the helm, Waterford subsequently became manager of his native Tipperary. His spell featured a league title win this year while they contested the All-Ireland and Munster hurling finals in 2020. So Davy Fitzgerald would be returning, if he is announced later on, to a job which he departed in 2011, having won a Munster title. Fitzgerald also led Waterford to the 2008 All-Ireland final, having taken over mid-season from Justin McCarthy. So I suppose... big picture here, Brian, a second coming, how would it be received by the Waterford hurling public?
Evening, Shane. Yeah, I suppose the speculation has been mounting all week, and particularly today when there was a full Waterford County Board meeting called. So the expectation is that we will have a new manager before the evening is out. And as you mentioned, it seems to be the second coming of Davy Fitz in Waterford. Look, I suppose locally, Davy Fitz is a huge personality and probably polarises views in some regard. So it won't be, I suppose, a unanimously welcomed by everybody. But, you know, having said that, he is an All-Ireland winning manager, I suppose, with a great track record. And you know, is it the right time, I suppose, to return to Waterford? Is it ever a good time to return to manage a county for a second term? I suppose, look, only time will tell.
Yeah, and for Waterford, I mean, they had such high expectations this summer and things, it didn't go to plan, to be fair. Like, how big of a job will it be to lift spirits? And I suppose, is Davy Fitz then the ideal character in terms of bringing the energy that a Davy Fitz managerial appointment brings?
Yeah, well, look, I think, in fairness, you know, it's that experience that Davy Fitz will bring, I suppose, that I'm sure will have impressed the Waterford County Board. If you look at it from a Waterford perspective, this is a hugely important appointment. If you look at the life cycle of this particular Waterford team, they're very much in their prime. If you look at the main players, Austin Gleeson, Stephen Bennett, Shane Bennett, Patrick Corn, your Jamie Barnes, Tadhg Burke, all these players are in their late 20s or certainly 27, 8, 9 come next year's championship. So the window of opportunity for this Waterford team to actually win in All-Ireland is certainly in the next couple of seasons. The following appointment, whenever that will happen, would be very much a rebuilding job. So maybe perhaps that would have been on the mind of the Waterford County Board, you know, in appointing an experienced manager. I know the likes of Stephen Malumphy would have been mentioned with the job, the current Kerry senior manager and, of course, former Waterford captain. But maybe it's a little bit early for someone like Stephen. And they're opting for, I suppose, the experienced an experienced hand.
How is Davy remembered? Because I mentioned there, I suppose, in the intro, that Munster title, All-Ireland final appearance, albeit they came out in the wrong end of the result, but how overall is his first tenure as manager remembered and reflected upon?
I suppose it depends who you talk to be honest, you know. Like, it's like everything with Davy. There's pluses and minuses. Some people would have had huge regard for what he did for Waterford. And I suppose on the positive side, you know, last time Waterford won a Munster title was 2010 when Davy was manager. Now, there were some very bad days as well. I remember a 7-21 defeat below in Páirc Uí Chaoimh to Tipperary in 2011 Munster final, that All-Ireland in 08. I think, in fairness, the 08 team was very much at the end of their cycle. Mm. This is a different team he's taken over now. You know, and whether he can get that, make that difference between winning an All-Ireland or not, that's really what people locally are hoping for anyway. And let's be honest, All-Ireland winning managers, there's not that many out there. And I see speculation elsewhere that you could have Liam Sheedy being involved in Offaly next year. So, you know, the field of successful managers with the sort of experience that Davy Fitz is not huge. I suppose the concerns would be around the style of play, what way, you know, Davy, we all know he sets teams up in particular fashion. Can he adapt to the current Waterford players and utilise them to the talent that he will have at his hands? I know even the Sunday game last week, there was a lot of criticism of how Cork Camogie team set up and the use of sweepers, and I suppose implied in that would have been a criticism of Davy Fitz. Now, again, perhaps that was a former Cork Camogie manager making those assessments. You know, maybe there's a certain bias there, but I think that would be the concern is, I think in the last couple of years in particular, you know, under Liam Cahill, it's been a new, dare I say it, attacking style, more akin to some of the teams of the noughties where, you know, you had that opportunity for that flair as well to triumph and to be shown. I think there would be a concern that under with Davy Fitz, will there be a return to a more conservative, I suppose, setup or outlook in relation to how the team actually plays?
I take that on board, and it's certainly, I suppose, aesthetically pleasing, and it's easy on the eye for fans as well. But I mean, Davy is the last manager to lead Waterford to a Munster title, albeit back in 2010, and he brought the 08 team to their first All-Ireland final, Waterford's first All-Ireland final in 45 years. And albeit he's coming on board, if he does take the job, it's different circumstances. Obviously, Justin McCarthy left in
midstream.
Yeah, greatly different circumstances than Liam Cahill leaving. But is a change possibly good for Waterford?
It's a different team. I suppose this is a different Waterford team. Look, I'd like to think that any manager going into a county would assess the talent available to him and organise his team around that rather than having, you know, a fixed pattern of play or set structure that he wants the players to fit into. I think it should be the other way around, and that is probably the one concern. But, you know, I think you rightly mentioned, you know, if Davy was to help Waterford win an All-Ireland, a first since 1959, they'll be building statues down on the quay in Waterford City to Davy, and I don't think they'll be worried whether there's, you know, seven backs or eight backs or plus ones or sweepers. I don't think people would be that concerned with one way to line up. But having said that, Waterford has a tradition, you know, even going back to that 59, of, you know, playing hurling in a certain way. And I think in general, supporters, yes, they want winning hurling, they want winning games, but they want to see players out there expressing themselves, you know, and that hopefully will transpire.
Hurling, and indeed, I suppose, Gaelic games, modern Gaelic games, isn't just about 15 men on a pitch anymore. You know, Davy would be a man that would energise sponsors, business, media within the county as well. So, you know, an appointment like Davy Fitzgerald, as I say, if, and I, you know, I have to make that a big if, he is announced later on, there's a strong possibility, but we're not sure for certain. But, you know, an appointment like that would generate a lot of interest, a lot of enthusiasm.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that would have been forefront of the thinking of the county board as well, because, you know, Waterford County Board have a lot on their plate at the moment. There's the redevelopment of Welsh Park, which will take up a lot of resources, which is due to happen later this year. And there's no doubt, and particularly in his first time around in Waterford, Davy certainly garnered huge support from the business community. You know, he is a sponsor's dream in a lot of cases, and he has a brilliant track record of I suppose fundraising and organising and getting funds to support the team and support the players. So I think that is a, you know, he certainly comes with that in his locker as well. And I think if you're sitting on a county board and you're sometimes strapped for cash, having somebody of Davy's business nous as well as his coaching and managerial experience, I can certainly see the obvious attraction there as well.
Brian, before I let you go, we talk about the belief and I suppose the expectation that Davy will have. But I suppose reflecting on, in terms of, I may asked how Davy's first stint as manager will be remembered. How will Liam Cahill's stint as Waterford manager be remembered? Because already, if this appointment is made, I'm already just, I can't even describe how much I'm looking forward to tip Waterford next year.
Yeah, look, I think in fairness, Liam Cahill was an excellent appointment for Waterford at the time. He was, in his own life, I suppose, he was a successful underage coach with Tipperary. Probably had a chip on his shoulder not getting the Tip Senior job at that stage. You know, young coach coming into Waterford to prove himself. And I think if you look at the achievements, getting to a Munster final, getting to an All-Ireland, albeit losing to Limerick in both. But again, he also was over that COVID period as well. So, you know, I think they've done very well. And okay, this year, championship-wise, has been a bit of a disaster. There is only three trophies you can win in hurling, the Munster, the All-Ireland, and the league title. Waterford did win a league title. It seems like an age ago, to be honest with you. The question, I suppose, that will now be posed for the players, and if it be Davy Fitz, he'll be certainly trying to find out how the league form that was so impressive somewhat disappeared by the time championship came around, and particularly in that period between the Limerick defeat, which is a good performance, to the Cork game, which really is what cost Waterford their place in the All-Ireland series. I think that's, you know, and for any successful county, I think you need your manager, you need your players, you need county board, sponsors, supporters, local media, and you need everybody rowing in the one direction. And I suppose I'm sure the Waterford County Board will hope that once the appointment is made or ratified, that I think everybody will row behind it. And, you know, I suppose, look, I'd certainly wish whoever is appointed the best of luck.
Do you believe there's an All-Ireland title in this current Waterford panel?
I do. I absolutely do. And I think if you, you know, it's amazing looking at how successful Limerick are in the last number of years. And, you know, I would have been at an awful lot of those underage Munster finals, minor finals, where the Tom Morrisseys and players like that would have been in opposite ends of the field to Austin Gleeson and Stephen Bennett. And, you know, I'm sure if you're those Waterford players, you're looking and saying, well, look, we match those guys at underage. Why can't we match them? Why can't we beat them at senior? I think there's definitely the potential to win in All-Ireland. But, you know, potential is one thing. Going and actually winning it is a whole together different kettle of fish altogether. And that is the question. Can players come together? Can they make those extra sacrifices? Can Davy Fitz, you know, maybe be the man to lead that charge to win an All-Ireland? You know, Waterford are probably the only, I suppose, major Division 1 county who hasn't won an All-Ireland in recent times. Like, it, we're talking about 1959. It sounds like a, you know, a different age altogether.
Mm. No, absolutely. Well, we'll be interesting to see how this story develops. Brian Flannery, thank you very much for taking the call. The Waterford County Board meeting that I alluded to, so I believe there's an executive meeting at 7 o'clock and then the meeting at 7:30 in Dungarvan. So I suppose it is very much a developing story, but all signs pointing towards Davy Fitz returning to Waterford and Stigmar Hurling. Saoirse Bulfin will be the Meath Hurling manager. And just before we take a break, because there's lots more to come, we're going to turn our attention to rugby and back to soccer as well, just to update you on Ireland cricket. Ireland now require another 11 runs with 5 wickets in hand and 16 balls remaining, so it looks like Ireland are on course to defeat Afghanistan. But we're going to hear from Nicola Friday and Greg McWilliams in a few moments time, so stick with us here in Game On.
Game On
Rugby.
Now, the Irish women's rugby squad are winging their way to Japan for an historic first ever summer tour. They will play 2 tests against Japan, the first Saturday week on August 20th, the second 7 days later. A total of 61 players have been in camp over the summer, with the squad being reduced to 29 players before departure. And that squad will be reduced by head coach Greg McWilliams. He was on media duty today before jetting off. So what would success be over the coming weeks?
I think every coach in this position would say that you're hoping to see growth and development, like, as more so off the field as well as on it. We've had a group of players that have been training for the majority of the summer, and then we've been in camp for the last week, and the energy has been really impressive. There's definitely been an increase in our execution rates and just our all-around energy, which has been really important. So just looking to have fun as well as being very serious about being competitive for 2 tests. So it's about getting that balance right on any tour. So for us, we're leaving now today, and it's about making sure that we get our travel right. And we have, you know, in the background, we have, for example, like our nutritionist, Anne-Marie Mulholland, and we have Ed Slattery, who's our head S&C, have done a huge amount of work with our medical staff in the background to make sure that we have all the relative time zones covered from a nutritional point of view, from a sleep point of view. It's about performing as well. We want to show people what this team is made of, and we can't wait to get out there and get into 2 tests. I think once the squad was announced, everything ramped up as you'd expect. You know, we've got 4 players who've just completed their leaving cert, and they're here because they're talented. And they're here because they've got lots to offer. And then we have really good experience. And then we've got players who are still, you know, 21, 22 that seem like veterans at this stage. So it's a really exciting squad. And as I said to you, we had a particular vision. Myself and Nicola would have sat down with the senior leadership. We have a vision into how we want to play, how we want to inspire, and how we want to represent the country. And, you know, we're just striving every day to get there. And this is no chance for us to test ourselves. But I am buzzing. I am buzzing to get to Japan, because there's a lot of work's gone into it, a lot of work behind the scenes. So many people are contributing to this. I think that's what's making it really special, is because there's so much collaboration, and it's exciting for the players, and I'm just so proud of them and how much work they've put in. It's really inspirational, and I hope they can go out now and hopefully do well in Japan. That's the plan.
No doubt about it. Greg McWilliams is buzzing. Nicola Friday will captain the side. It's an exciting time to be involved for the players, with the appointment last week of Gillian McDerby as the IRFU's new head of women's performance and pathways, and indeed news that the union is to offer up to 43 elite player contracts from next season.
It's great. It's been a really positive few months, I suppose, like with the announcement of the Japan tour. That was a boost for all of us after the Six Nations, knowing that we were going to get 2 quality kind of tests in the summer and get the opportunity to tour as a squad, which is so important for a team to be able to go and play some rugby and have some downtime together as well. And then I suppose the announcement of Gillian and the contracts, like, it's great news. And like for us as players, like, it's such a huge step. Like, I think for me personally as a player, if you asked me when I first started if I'd ever get that opportunity, I probably would have said I don't think I will. But I think it's it's brilliant now that it's gone that way for women's rugby. And for us though, we're just focusing back onto Japan for the next few 2 weeks, and we hope that we can get some two quality matches.
So today's media engagement came just 24 hours after the IRFU also published their updated policy on gender participation. So the chance means that contact rugby for players in the female category is limited to those whose sex was recorded as female at birth. In the male category, players whose sex is recorded at birth as female may continue to play if they provide written consent and a risk assessment is carried out. The policy received a mixed reaction yesterday. The union say it is in line with World Rugby and other governing bodies. And Nicola Friday, as expected, was asked about the change today.
For me, like at this time, like I don't really want to kind of make any like answers on that, because I'd like to know more about the whole like the whole situation and like the laws and stuff like that. So for me, I'm just going to be focusing on Japan, and I think that's something they can review in a few weeks.
So Nicola Friday reserving judgment for the moment. So from rugby football to American football, it is Thursday and it's time to hear some of the stories making the headlines over in the US of A. Unfortunately, Jeff Shepherd hasn't been able to join us live this week, but Shep, ever the professional, he has sent us this postcard from America.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Hey Shane, if you know the American movie classic Field of Dreams, you're familiar with the phrase, if you build it, they will come. And tonight, the Reds and Cubs are coming to Iowa for the Field of Dreams game. This is the second year that teams will meet up at the historic Cornfield Ballpark in the middle of America. Last year, players came out through the corn, among other nods to the movie. These are two Midwestern teams playing in a Midwestern state in the middle of a cornfield. It's going to be fantastic. Now, over in the NFL, no real update on the Deshaun Watson situation. He's still suspended for the first six games of the season. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell is asking for another review and a harsher penalty for Watson. Deshaun Watson has been named the starter for the Browns preseason opener against Jacksonville tomorrow in Florida. It remains to see how much he'll play. Remember, he is a new quarterback with a new team, so there is some familiarity they're trying to gain with the offense and his teammates. More to come as this situation develops. And with an eye on America, I'm Jeff Shepherd.
Game on.
Football.
So, from American football to association football, and we're going to turn our attention back to St. Patrick's Athletic. They are in action against CSKA Sofia in Tala Stadium. Before we cross live to Cathal Mullany, we can hear the thoughts of Alan Matthews, who was speaking yesterday ahead of the big one tonight.
Well, the game is half-time, and they'll probably feel disappointed that we came away with a result. They'll obviously look to up their intensity and up the way they go about it, and maybe play with it. Greater level of tempo, or they may make some changes, we don't know, but we respect our opponent and we know they're a very, very good side, playing at a good standard in Europe nearly every year, you know, consistent group stages at various competitions, so they're a very, very good side. But we also know that we can up our ante, we also know that we can play maybe a little bit more positively. We'll take great heart from the achievements of Shamrock Rovers, and we'll take great heart from our own performance last week, and feel with a crowd behind us tomorrow night that we can actually up our performance and be positive, take the game to them at the right times.
The weather is obviously very warm here this week. Does that impact your preparation or change your preparation in any way?
It's been almost consistent now the last 3 weeks or so, from Slovenia to Bulgaria to Dublin. I think the Dublin weather will probably be warmer than it was in Bulgaria last week. So the players are well used to playing in these conditions. It will be relatively mild, I would imagine, at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. But the players are well used to it. And hydration and nutrition are all key, and all those preparations we'll have done as well as we possibly can. So the weather, it's great to play or to watch football in those situations, in circumstances. It's difficult to play, but by match time tomorrow, I think it'll be good. We'll be all good, and I think the conditions will be as we expect.
And finally, in terms of an occasion, you've mentioned yourself, Alan, huge crowd, sellout crowd here expected tomorrow. I know you're not in Richmond Park, but it's here in Tala Stadium. It's a great occasion for the club to look forward to.
It's brilliant, and great testament goes to the support we would have got from South Dublin County Council, the Shamrock Rovers, who have been very, very supportive in enabling us to play in this stadium, which is a terrific stadium. We'll try and turn it as much green, or red and white as we can from green, tomorrow. But I think ultimately our supporters will have a real huge part to play in tomorrow night to get behind the team. And I think from an Irish point of view, we're all trying to achieve in Europe, all the clubs are, and I think it's great that Shamrock Rovers are into the next stage. We're going to try and get into the next round, and I think there's a good support base getting behind the clubs to do well in Europe, and as long as we can play a part in that, we'll be very, very happy. But our supporters tomorrow will have a huge part to play.
So Cathal Mullany is live in Talla Stadium at the moment. And Cathal, you were chatting to Alan Matthews there, and he mentioned about trying to turn the green seats of Shamrock Rovers South Dublin Council Stadium into a sea of red and white. Well, have Pat's fans been able to turn it into a bit of a cauldron?
Well, they're still coming in, Shane, as things stand here. We're still just over an hour away from kickoff, or under an hour now away from kickoff. But the fans are coming in on a real sense of occasion, Shane, surrounding this match here at Talla Stadium tonight. St. Pat's have really embraced this run in the Europa Conference League. It seems to have given them a new impetus, really, given that their league form has been somewhat patchy this season, but their form in Europe has been superb. Their home form against Mura in the home leg of that tie earlier on in this competition, they put in a really dominant display that night and were unfortunate not to come away from more from that game, but they did get through the tie. And then obviously that historic result last week in Sofia, giving them a great platform here tonight to try and progress to the playoff round. The tickets are still on sale, we're told, close to a sellout crowd expected here at Talla Stadium tonight. The tickets for the two main stands sold out pretty quickly, and it all adds up to what promises to be a very, very interesting night. And of course the conditions are absolutely ideal, Shane. The sprinklers have been working overtime here at Talla Stadium, but it's about 26 degrees down at pitch level right now, and the main stand that we're sitting at the back of, the shadow of it is just casting about halfway across the pitch, so the temperature bound to fall as the night progresses, but it's still very warm indeed here.
Me stuck in a studio here in South Dublin, whereas chatting to Darren Frehill enjoying the sun in Rome, and yourself, Cathal, enjoying the sun in Talla. I'm very, very jealous. But kickoff less than an hour away. Of course, it is a match you can see on the RT News Now channel. But team news is in, Cathal.
Yeah, so St. Pat's have named an unchanged side, Shane, for tonight's game. So that means that they've retained the same 11 that played in that game in Sofia last week. So Owen Doyle leads the lineup. Top of works, Chris Forrester has been in really good form in this campaign as well. So it's Joseph Anang starting in goal. Then it's Harry Brockbank at the back alongside Tom Gravosti, and the captain Joe Redmond alongside Anthony Breslin and Barry Cotter as well. Then in the centre of the park, we've got Adam O'Reilly alongside Jamie Lennon. In front of them, then Forrester and Billy King with Owen Doyle up top. Interestingly, five changes for CSKA Sofia this evening. In at the back comes Koch and Turitsov, while up front, three changes in all for the visitors. Lindseth, Garces de Jesus and Moreno Alvarez. So perhaps the visiting manager Sasa Ilić looking for a little bit more in terms of an attacking threat from the visitors here tonight.
I was chatting to Keith Tracy a little bit earlier on, and I suppose I posed a question about how confident he might be, but he basically came back at me and said probably more hopeful than confident. Would that be the general feeling among Pat's fans there?
I think it would be, Shane. That would be a fair assessment. Despite the result last week, CSKA Sofia, obviously a hugely impressive club in European competition in recent years. They've won 31 league titles in their home country, and they've dominated for long stages and long periods in their history there. But St. Pat's have reason to be somewhat optimistic tonight, given their performances, I think, in the Europa Conference League so far. As I mentioned, that performance against Mura was totally dominant, and that's a Mura side that beat Spurs in last year's group stages. And of course, they have real quality in their team. When you consider the likes of Owen Doyle and Chris Forrester would probably take their place in any team in Ireland and beyond as well. And if they can reach the levels that they've been playing at in recent weeks, you would give them every opportunity tonight. But Alan Matthews, speaking yesterday at the press conference, spoke about the importance of not trying to defend that 1-0 lead that they have on aggregate, but rather trying to add to it tonight. And that would certainly make it a much more enjoyable occasion as opposed to the potentially nervous one that it might be for the St. Pat's fans here tonight.
I stumbled across a stat. I'm not sure if this is positive or negative if you're a Pat's fan listening in, but the last time CSKA Sofia won the second leg of a European tie, having lost the first leg at home, was when beating defending Champions League winners Liverpool 1-0 in Anfield. They lost 3-2 in aggregate and have never got through the nine times they lost the home first leg. So,
well, there you go. Good stat. But it is interesting, Sasa Ilić speaking at his press conference yesterday as well, full of praise for St. Pat's after that performance last week. I think they were a little bit surprised perhaps with the performance that St. Pat's produced in Sofia last week, and he spoke pretty glowingly about the togetherness of the St. Pat's players, and they'll certainly need that tonight to withstand what you expect will be a major onslaught from CSKA Sofia in that final third as they look to break down that one goal deficit.
I couldn't let you go without mentioning Sligo Rovers. I know you're a proud Sligo man. It's similar to the way I always try and shoehorn a Shelburne reference in as well. So they have an uphill battle to climb out west. Can Sligo do it?
Well, I mean, I think it's a tall ask, Shane.
I feel it's going to be heart over head in the answer if you say yes.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's been a magical summer for Sligo Rovers, though, and great credit is due to all the players and the club in general. They've done fantastic work, and I think the fact that the games have been in the showgrounds as well, I think the Motherwell home leg is a game that will live in the memory for a lot of the passionate Sligo Rovers fans for many years to come, and the club deserve great credit for having that game in the showgrounds. But tonight is a tall order. Viking were very impressive last week, having watched the stream of that game. They look very impressive, and it is going to be a tall ask tonight for Sligo Rovers, but I've no doubt that the atmosphere in the showgrounds will be hopping despite the deficit that Sligo Rovers face ahead of kickoff there.
Absolutely good atmosphere in the showgrounds, and I'm sure a great atmosphere in Talla Stadium. Colm Mullaney, thank you very much for checking in from Talla. As I say, that is a game you can see in RT News Now. Kickoff is at 7:45. The Sligo kickoff is at 7 p.m. And just before we go, I can confirm that Ireland defeated Afghanistan. Ireland won by 5 wickets in the end in their T20 international. But Shane will be back tomorrow evening at the same time in Game On. A big thanks to Laura Lee Davis and indeed Damien O'Mara for ensuring this evening's show ran smoothly. Lots more coming up in 2FM. Dan Hegarty's at 11 p.m. Jenny Green's at 9 p.m. and coming up directly after us is Graeme Smith, so do stay tuned.
RTE 2FM.